This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, and today it's a bumper pod. I'm joined by Sean Bradbury. How are we, Sean?
Very well, yeah. Good weekend all round, and yeah, all good. All good.
A little fold in the jumper there.
Yeah, well, we could talk about that. There was a little blemish that's hopefully tactically been hidden.
Viewers, if you press the red button, you can get staying cam and follow the little stain that's on Sean.
It might even be tomorrow, Sean. I think I pressed the red button myself on a Greg, so, yeah.
Keith McDonald, no stains on you. You're
okay. No, I'm clean, man. Yeah, clean. Fresh from a lovely weekend. Had a little breaky Saturday, then straight to the match. Yeah. 3 points. Can't beat it.
Yeah. And Theo Squires, you okay?
Yeah, all good. I'm enjoying the fact that you've actually got the mug in your hand now and you've got the blood red on camera.
Yeah.
A little bit of self-promotion.
Product placement. Yeah, I suppose we're all happy men. I'll start the pod by giving viewers, listeners, a little bit of an insight into some goings-on in the office. Three Evertonians who won't be named, but if you listen to the Royal Blue podcast, you might be able to work it out, decided to pile on me before, and the three, Kiefer, you sort of tried to help me a little bit, but Sean and Theo kept their heads down.
Yeah,
got battered because I don't think there is a conspiracy against Everton, but I mean... Sean, we'll start with you because you kept your nose out before.
I wanted to see you wound up. I think you performed better in the pot when you was fire in your belly.
Is there a big conspiracy?
There's absolutely not a big conspiracy. My view on the obvious incident in question in the Kanate one was that it was a second bookable offence. I think I always try and judge these things on if that was your team and it was down the other end, would you be on your feet asking for it? Of course, I think every Liverpool fan would do. I don't regard it though as. I think it's hard to say it wasn't a game-changing incident in the sense that it did affect, obviously, the sequence of events that came after it. Like, you know, that happens and, you know, just butterfly effect type thing that, you know, Liverpool aren't then getting a penalty 7 or 8 minutes later or whatever it was. But I think if you just look at the game as a whole, the game plan that Everton came with, the game plan they were reduced to by that stage, given they only had 10 men, and the fact that, I mean, apart from that Calvert-Lewin header early on, I don't think there was anything of note, really, was it? There was nothing that was troubling or
worrying. Garner at the absolutely mental volley.
In, you know, fair play. But yeah, I just don't think there was much from them at that point. I think if Liverpool had had what would have panned out to be half an hour, 10 versus 10, they would have found a way, would be my view on it. And I think I've seen a fair few Blues kind of bemoan the decision, which is understandable, but kind of say, in the grand scheme of things, you can't really argue with how it all transpired. And I do think, not to be kind of too tinted the other way, I think if you're going to focus on one incident, there's quite a few incidents you could choose to focus on in that game. You know, one thing that I think has been kind of swept by a little bit is the Diaz pen shout when, was it Patterson?
Yeah.
I think he caught him. I think there was a little bit of contact. Totally fair enough for the ref to go, I don't think that is enough contact. But I think that's one that if it went the other way and the ref gave it, VAR wouldn't have like ungiven it. And I think there's, you know, Tarkowski's another one. You know, could he have been booked for, was it Jota on the edge of the area? There was a foul that if he'd been on the yellow then there would have been a second yellow. So I think if you go too big on one incident, which is obviously a subjective one, I think, you know, on another day that could have just not been a yellow as it was for Kanate. You know, he could have gone either way, and it's tried to see some comparisons to what happened to Liverpool against Spurs, which is just spurious, isn't it? You know, it's a small incident in a game. It's not a legitimate goal that was awarded, and then a miscommunication and deliberate, you know, choice of action meant that didn't happen. You know, it sounds like I'm not over that, which may well be true. But yeah, I just think that was the wrong call, but not the defining call.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, Kiefer, that we both as supporters of Liverpool and on the Blood Red podcast, we don't go big on incidents. We don't talk incidents. I don't think we talk.
It's not
what we do. But Kanate, I think we'd all probably agree it was a sending off, or should have been a sending off. But aside from that, I mean, the game kind of followed the pattern that I think we all. I mean, you did the pod, didn't you, Friday? We all sort of thought like it would follow that same pattern, the sort of bit of a slog, speaking it. Quite difficult for Liverpool, Everton sitting in. I mean, the last three derbies have finished 2-0 for Liverpool, and all have been late, fairly late goals, haven't they, from what I can remember. So did it follow the same pattern that you thought? Did you ever worry that Liverpool perhaps wouldn't find a goal?
No, because as you say, it's exactly what I think people expected. And it's quite weird, isn't it? Because speaking to a few of my mates who are City fans on Friday, and they were saying, you know, like 3 or 4-0 Liverpool, and I was just like, it's just not the case.
No.
I think people... It's so cliche, isn't it? With Derby's form goes out the window, it doesn't matter where you are in the league and kind of what quality you've got in the ranks. It is probably decided on moments, and when we kind of saw that on Saturday, certainly the two big ones obviously Canate, and then later the penalty that Diaz wins, and obviously Salah after that, Everton were never getting back in the game, were they? But yeah, as you say, the one last season was similar. It was quite a cagey affair, and I think Everton hit the post, didn't they, the one last season, and then Liverpool got the other end, and Nunes and Salah kind of combined. So, I mean, the impressive thing about Saturday was that, I was saying to Theo earlier, and I think Sean as well, that there was never any sense of kind of trepidation where, like, you thought Liverpool were going to, it was going to get to the stage where you were having, like, someone like a Lovren lashing it from, like, 40 yards out, like he did at Wembley all those years ago. There was such an element of control, and I think we've seen that this season throughout. In, you know, you think the game against Newcastle at the end of August, where, you know, things weren't going Liverpool's way. They were 1-0 down to 10 men, whatever. And they just keep playing the same way, sticking to their principles, you know, recycling possession, sticking to their guns, and ultimately it pays off. It's the same at Spurs. They were probably a bit too gutsy that day. You probably, in hindsight, I think there was a Robertson late free kick, which kind of leads to the goal. You're probably thinking, just take a point. But, you know, these lads who have, you know, a lot of the team, I know there's been changes in recent weeks and months with, you know, players leaving and new players coming in. But, you know, this is a group of players who've won all the major honours, and, you know, they're not used to disappointment. So, you know, that was probably their downfall then. But against Everton on Saturday, I was just really impressed with how they kept going, recycled it, and ultimately it paid off. And, yeah, they were probably a bit fortunate the way they, you know, they opened the scoring. But as I say, after that, Everton didn't, but even before that, apart from the header after, what, 30, 40 seconds, they didn't really land a glove on Liverpool, didn't fall. And it was just one of those, you just were so desperate for them to kind of get the payoff that they deserved. And I think, you know, 2-0 was a, I don't think anyone could complain. I know Everton will probably look at the Canate incident and maybe try to hang it on that. And we've seen Dyche say that already, that, yeah, you know, it changed the game. But in reality, I think even if it was a, you know, 10 versus 10, I still think Liverpool would have found a breakthrough if it was with 5-10 minutes ago, or, you know, in added time, whatever.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it changed the game, Theo, because I don't think it would have changed the way Everton approached the game. After, if he'd have gone, I still think you'd have seen Everton sitting in, because that's what they did before the sending off and counter-attacked Liverpool. But like Kiefer says, and I think Klopp mentioned it in his press conference afterwards, there was a maturity about the way Liverpool went about their business. They didn't panic. And that's what good teams do, isn't it? They continue to play the same way. We see it with Man City a lot, where you get to sort of 70 minutes and you think, oh, they might drop some points here, and then they eventually get the job done. And that is impressive, isn't it, about Liverpool so far this season?
It's what Liverpool were lacking last year. That's why they lost that identity. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that ability to grind out the wins, and there was that anxiety there. You get into the final 20 minutes of a game, mm-hmm, you've still not scored. You're thinking it could be, you get hit on the counter and you're losing. Like we saw it, the Leeds game's probably the memorable one where they get that last-minute winner. And it's just Liverpool have got that maturity back in their game. They've got that belief in their abilities. Like, we knew how Everton were going to set up. If they wanted to cause any damage to Liverpool, it was targeting McAllister and targeting Tsimikas. And they did a little bit. That's how they got the opening chance. And Tsimikas is probably lucky not to get a booking at some point in the game. But as soon as Ashley Young gets sent off, they decide five at the back, we'll play for a draw. They take off the wingers. And then even when, if Canate had gone off and it was 10 versus 10, then they bring on the strikers, but they've got no wingers to feed it to him in the first place. Yeah. So they're still then lumping it along, still having to defend with five at the back. At Liverpool, it was just a game of keep possession, keep the attacks going, and Everton are not a good enough side to keep us out. Even with five defenders as deep as they were, you knew that there was going to be a chance that fell. Like, there was a few blocks there, we're thinking, oh, Salah, and was it Gravenberch, you know, the ones in quick succession, that could have deflected in rather than go behind for a corner. Might have taken a mistake or a penalty. But there was always that constant belief, Liverpool are going to get the goal and they're going to get the win here. It's what they do against Everton. It's what they do at Anfield. And they're just so much better than Everton and so much better than they were last year.
Sure. I often think that Dyche is a good measuring stick of where you're at in terms of, you know, I think back to the Klopp's first full season, was it? They went there in August and they had like a ridiculous amount of possession and shots, but lost the game 2-0.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
I remember it felt like they frustrated Liverpool. Obviously during the COVID season when Liverpool sort of fell to pieces a bit, they lost 1-0, didn't they, to Burnley at home. So, like Theo says, if you look at the way Burnley, Everton played on Saturday.
Probably did,
yeah. but they did play in that style, didn't they? They sort of set up to frustrate, set up to win set pieces against Liverpool. But Liverpool have so much quality, and we'll talk about the players that came off the bench later on, but they find different ways to make the breakthrough, and yeah, they got maybe a bit fortunate with the penalty. I think it was a penalty, but I mean in the way that it came about. But that's what you have to do, don't you? You have to believe that you can sort of chip away and find gaps in these teams.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Definitely, and to be honest, I actually thought, I'm not going to say that Everton were bold and adventurous in the first half, but I actually thought they were trying something a little bit different than maybe you always see from Dyche. And maybe it's a hallmark of what they're doing this season. I mean, we've heard them talk about XG and things like that, haven't we? And I think Everton have had a couple of games where they've been hard done by, especially ones at home. But I thought at times they were kind of... DCR was going up against Van Dijk, and obviously that's a tough battle. I thought Virgil van Dijk was arguably Liverpool's man of the match. He was mopping up most in the air, but then... It looked to me like Decore and McNeil were both quite far forward, coming down the left. And there was a few situations, I'd say there were situations on both sides in the first half where Liverpool and Everton would wish they could have their time again. Because there was a few times where Everton, even from open play, but certainly from set pieces or, you know, deep free kick, where it was almost like 3-on-3 at times, like them against Liverpool's defence, albeit initially in the air. And if they won, you know, one flick on, it could have maybe got a little bit hairy to Liverpool. But then you can obviously flip that the other way, can't you, and say the amount of counter-attacks Liverpool had. I mean, if it was an Everton corner in the first half, you were thinking, right, Liverpool should be in here almost. Yeah, you know,
it did almost every corner, didn't it? Yeah, every free kick.
100%. It was kind of, you know, they were committing to getting men forward, which was probably the right decision from Dyche, and Liverpool were very much like ready to go, weren't they, and like charged on the other end. But I think that the key thing for me, first half, and just as the game wore on, was what Kiefer referred to before, and it was just how cool and composed Liverpool were. And I just don't think you saw that anywhere more markedly than the midfield, where, you know, three lads who I don't think they've started together before, have I?
Not in the Premier League.
Not in the Prem, and certainly derbies for Liverpool, or in the case of Szoboszlai, like, you know, he said to Klopp, has he actually never played a derby before, like, for club or country, which is a bit mad. But in that environment, the amount that they kept hold of the ball, how progressive they were with the ball, and I think they were just the dominant figures in the game. You think late on, McAllister keeping his head to find Nunes in space, rather than, like, you know, so many players would just like boot the ball forward there, wouldn't he? Yeah. Quite aimlessly, would just essentially clear their lines. And he just took that extra breath and was like, I'm going to put this centrally for Darwin to run onto. And then, you know, wasn't quite a certain goal. There was a bit to do from there, but it was so good. And in that same moment, Szoboszlai was like, it just felt like he was jogging, but he was like, he was bursting forward. Wasn't he ready to, like, you know, be part of that move and maybe score himself? And yeah, I think that was where Liverpool just, Not won the game necessarily, but just imposed himself on the game and showed their quality. And that's why I just think, you know, as much as it would have been easier for Everton if it was 10 against 10, I don't see where their goal would have come from.
You're saying there the set pieces. Like, Everton going to Anfield, set pieces is always going to be the best chance of scoring. If they had actually threatened to do anything from any set piece, you're feeling a bit more anxious. Every time they get a free kick or a corner, you're thinking they've got a chance here. But the feeling was, as Sean said, Liverpool are about to attack it. This is Liverpool going to have a good chance of scoring. When they're putting it on the heads of Tarkowski or Keane, or it's like, that's how little they threatened. Like, whatever, I don't know what the XG was for them on Saturday, but they just weren't looking like they were going to challenge anything. Like, did Alisson really have a save to make? Like, simple header straight at him in that first minute.
Key as well is that there was a few early headers. I know Calvert-Lewin gets the one after, you know, 30, 40 seconds, but there was one after a couple of minutes, maybe even straight from kickoff or whatever, but Calvert-Lewin and Van Dijk, and I think as soon as, like, Van Dijk won that first one, you were like, right, you know, you build on that, and, you know, he's kind of got his number already. And Calvert-Lewin, as I say, that ball that goes into the box, you know, after a minute, and it's a pretty tame header. I mean, I think Calvert-Lewin probably jumps too early for that. He doesn't get enough power on it.
I think that's one of them. It's come so early in the game that you almost can't believe.
Yeah.
He's
not warm up.
He's probably had to jump a little bit early because, oh, I've got to get the leap on Van Dijk as well.
Exactly, and that's what, it's just little things like that, little margins that, you know, play on players' minds. And as Sean says, I thought Van Dijk was brilliant, and there's, you know, been a lot of talk, and it feels like whenever he plays for Holland, you know, people like to dig him out, past and present. But
Spires a good centre back.
Absolutely mad, but you know, this season, I know he's had the red card and whatnot, but feels like he's really kind of probably not getting back to the best he was, because I don't think he will ever kind of reach that peak again. But he's certainly, you know, on track to get to the levels he was in 21-22 when Liverpool nearly won it all. So that's, you know, it's only going to help Liverpool between now and the end of the season, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting about Van Dijk, though, because, like, people always say that he's not going to reach the levels he did 4 years ago. Well, you know, he's 4 years older, so I don't, you know, he wasn't think he came to Liverpool, didn't he, later in his career, 27, 28. He was never going to be... Liverpool bought him in his prime. So, yeah, of course he's past his best. But if you try an aerial bombardment against Virgil van Dijk, I don't think there's a better header of ball in terms of centre-half in the country. And he just dealt with that. That's easy for him, isn't it? It's balls in behind that you sort of worry about.
Yeah, he's got all the attributes you want in a centre back. Like, the one thing he lost from the injury was maybe that little bit of pace.
Yeah.
But he's still not a slouch, is he, by any means? And you look at centre backs, their peaks are this stage of the career. So the injury did knock him a little bit. But you look at, say, Thiago Silva at Chelsea, where he's still firing late 30s. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no reason why Van Dijk can't keep going well into his 30s as well. But if you're going to put it in the air when he's, what, 6'5", it's ridiculous. Yeah. He wins everything in the air. He's great on the ball. He reads it so well. He's a leader. That's why Jurgen Klopp wanted to spend $75 million on him in the first place. And while when he was at that absolute best, completely transforming Liverpool's defence, that was transformative. They'd gone from losing 4-1 at Spurs, where you had Lovren and Sacco and all the year before and all this, and it was a mess defensively, to put in someone in who could just change it overnight, because he actually knew what he was doing. He was that step above. He was that level above.
People don't rate, I think, enough his leadership abilities, because like you say, it wasn't so much the players, because all of those players, you know, Lovren, Clavan, others like that, Matip, obviously continued playing for it. It's not as if they all left, but with someone like Van Dijk alongside them, I still worry for the day they have to take Van Dijk out, because who do they find that is anywhere near as good in terms of his organisational skills, his verbal skills? I mean, he's just a really great leader, isn't he, in the back? Well,
the big moment he showed that in was when he stopped Trent getting booked. You know, when Trent was proper mouthing off at the referee and he just yanks him back. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously, he's got in trouble himself for dissent this season. He got quite a hefty fine. But being able to read the situation that well and take control of it, there's that respect and that aura for him. He's just such a good player. And we are lucky to have seen him at the peak of his powers. And Liverpool shirt, but he's probably another case of you take him for granted a little bit definitely. When they're longevity, and because it isn't as eye-catching as it was at the start.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only then when you do get to this stage of the career, where they're a little bit older and they're still doing it, they get that second wind. Like, we're looking at Mohamed Salah, and he's been a consistent goal scorer throughout his Liverpool career. But, oh, now you're doing it when you're 31, nearly 32. You're probably going to get another 30-goal season. You're going to be second most prolific season in your campaign if he keeps up this run, at least. You just appreciate them though, that little bit more when they're a little bit older and still doing it.
Yeah. I think as well, just to jump in, sorry, I think with Van Dijk, you can always tell is when, you know, he makes people around him better, doesn't he? And I think, you know, whenever you see Gomez or Matip or even Gomez, Konate, or, you know, I don't have statistics on how many times they've played, but they look like strangers when they play next to each other, which is obviously few and far between because of, you know, Van Dijk, apart from the big injuries he's had, his fitness record has been, you know, fairly decent at Liverpool. But whenever I think of the game last year, Wolves, the 3-0 they lost. I can't remember why Van Dijk must have been. I think he did his hamstring at Brentford. Yeah, he didn't play. And I mean, I don't know if you remember the first goal that day, but it was just like, I think Matip and Gomez over the same ball or something. And it was just
that the own goal.
I think so. And I think Matip booted it into his own net in the end or something. And it was just, you know, mistake after mistake after mistake. And you can see that, yes, his quality is missing, but also Steve has his leadership there, and he makes people around him better.
Yeah.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's organisational. I think a back line, Sean, is a delicate balance, or to use a phrase from a show I watched recently, a delicate ecosystem at the back. And Van Dijk makes sure that, you know, Tsimikas is a good example. Comes into the back four, and there was a lot of worries about him before the game. I thought as the game grew on, Sean, he equipped himself quite well. Obviously, Everton didn't then have wingers in the second half, but there was a fair few fouls he made in the first half. I've seen quite a few Everton fans comparing the fouls that he made to Ashley Young, which I thought was slightly odd, because they were nowhere near the same types of fouls to get sent off. But I mean, what did you make of him on Saturday? Obviously, Liverpool are going to go into a period with him for a long time. Do you think that he equipped himself well?
Yeah, I think as the game wore on, he got a bit better. I think it's ultimately going to lead to a not really. I wouldn't mind seeing a bit of Gomez there. I mean, you know, we ended up seeing Diaz at left back for a while, didn't we?
Which was
an interesting one. I think you're right in that how much Van Dijk kind of marshalling that back line does help everyone else. I mean, he's always just so vocal, isn't he? Like where I sit, even in like the biggest and most kind of fervent of atmospheres, you can always hear his voice booming out, and that helps someone like Tsimikas. I'd like to see things mixed up a little bit, and I'm just trying to think of the games coming up I suppose the one thing you could say in terms of Tsimikas is there's probably not a game where you'd really worry about him being there coming up. You know, like most of them, there's a couple of homes coming up, isn't there? You know, I think playing him in the Europa League is absolutely fine. Unless, because he might have to play in the league, there's a case to play a youngster there. And, you know, Gomez is getting minutes and opportunities at centre-back or slotting in at right-back as well. So maybe there's an argument to spare him a bit of that. I think, as you guys have all, you know, very well said, him being along Van Dijk will make it okay for as long as it has to be. But, you know, it does sound like it'll be a good few months with Robertson out, which isn't ideal. But I think the fact that Liverpool got through the game with Tsimikas in there and it got better just speaks to how, again, like we've said, how thoughtful and composed they were for this entire game. I think as well, just that general idea of growing into the game, I think that was just built into the game plan all along, wasn't it? You know, those two subs, Nunes and Elliott coming on after 60, felt, if not entirely predetermined, I think, you know, if it was 0-0, maybe even if it was 1-0 to Liverpool at that point, Klopp still would have done that. And that's why I just think, despite the incidents and the way it unfolded, Liverpool were always going to grow into it. And you look across the team and how performances kind of got better. And Elliott coming on, I thought he was exceptional again, another great cameo. I think that was always the way the game was going to turn out.
Let's talk subs then, because I did have it down. I mean, one thing I think has been a theme of this season, Kiefer, is Liverpool's squad is back to a squad where, I mean, even Saturday they had a couple of young players on the bench, but they still had, I mean, Gakpo hopefully isn't far away, but they still had Nunes and Elliott. I mean, there'd be other teams that would kill for a bench like that to come on, and they made a difference. I mean, you could almost count the games this season. The subs have made a difference in almost every game, and obviously in the early part of the season when they were coming back from a goal down, seemingly constantly, the subs were playing their part. I mean, that is massive for Liverpool this season, isn't it, going forward?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, just look at Man City and what they did last year, and the year before, look at how close Liverpool went to winning it all, and a large part of that was kind of, you know, in those games on Wednesday and Thursday nights in, you know, the League Cup, the FA Cup, whatever competition may be, when you maybe play a second-string team. And yes, we're noticing it now, but I think it'll be once you kind of head into that February, March period of the season when, you know, you're really going for it and, you know, you're probably balancing on multiple fronts, because at the minute Liverpool have got the Europa League, but it's almost like a, you know, for the Premier League team, if you want to call it that, it's like a distant, you know, thing, and they don't have to worry about it. It's not on the forefront of their mind. But, you know, when you get to the, you know, the round of 32 or the round of 16 or so on and so forth, then it'll become like, right, let's go and win it. Same for the League Cup, same for the FA Cup. So I think that's when we'll notice it. But I think I've always been quite critical of Klopp's substitutions. I've always felt he leaves them quite late. I think I said to Sean earlier that it always felt like he used to do like 70, 75, and obviously now we're seeing lows of added time, so you've probably got 75, 65, but previously it felt like, you know, a player would have a touch of the ball and shoot and it'd be like 87, 88, and, you know, they've already got themselves involved, you know, especially in like games when you maybe are looking for someone to flip the switch and do something different and kind of up the tempo. But I think this year's been really assertive, and that's because the competition for places at Liverpool is probably at an all-time high. Not only the amount of players they've got, but the quality. And, you know, you throw that into that Thiago to come back if he ever does. You've got Curtis Jones, who's obviously currently suspended. You've got Gakpo, as you say, Stefan Pesetic as well. So you've got loads of players and loads of different positions who offer different things. And as I say, the quality is one thing, but I think a lot of credit goes to Klopp for, you know, for being brave and bold, because, you know, if Liverpool did lose that 1-0, which, you know, it would have felt unlikely at the time, but if they lost that, people would have said maybe, you know, was he too gung-ho or whatever. But, you know, even if you go back, like you say, you know, earlier in the season, you look at Wolves, you were quite ruthless with McAllister, wasn't he? And I think that was half-time. You did Diaz in that game, wasn't it? So, you know, he's not messing around, not waiting to see in the first 15 minutes.
I mean, even if you take it all the way back to the first game of the season, the subs changed the game at Chelsea. I mean, people forget. I mean,
Elliott again.
Nunes was great. Nunes had a big chance, didn't he?
Even took Salah off, didn't he? Yeah. With Doke at the end.
And Liverpool were sort of on the front foot towards the end of the game, and I think it's been a theme in almost every game this season. Spurs aside, but that's only because they had nine men. So
I think that quick mention for Man City is a really intriguing one this season, because, you know, like we just said, I think on an individual game basis, Klopp is planning well, and in this instance, I think obviously international break and it being a half 12 and it being a derby was all factored into who came on when and who he saved. But City, I think a few of their title winning seasons have been defined by having someone like a presence who, second half of the season, thinking like a Mahrez or a Grealish, just suddenly out of nowhere has 10 or 12 games, you know, 8 or 10 goal involvements, and just turns the tide for them a little bit. But I think you named a few names there, Kiefer. I think you could probably already start to see candidates who could do that for Liverpool. I mean, even Nunes could be that man, couldn't he? You know, if he if he doesn't always start over the next few weeks. Gakpo certainly, Elliott as well. You know what I mean? Look how highly trusted he was last season when he had start after start early on, didn't he? And okay, his role has changed for now, but maybe he's being held back in reserve a bit for like January through to March or whatever. So yeah, it's a squad game, and it does feel like almost out of nowhere after concerns over the summer. Certainly in a kind of in terms of the attacking side of it, the options are just massive.
And I think as well, sorry to jump in, I think it changes so quickly, doesn't it? Because, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, before Curtis Jones gets the red card at Tottenham, everyone's, you know, saying, you know, what are the, you know, redefined player he's going to be, changed his game is really important. And not to say he isn't anymore, but then you look at Graham Birch's performance on Saturday, and you're like, well, you can't drop him. But you know, you've got so many games coming up, which is almost like a, you know, a blessing in disguise, really, when, you know, in years gone by, you probably don't like it. But the fact that you've got these so kind of lesser games in the Europa League where you can kind of, you know, tweak things and try different things and give the likes of Elliott, who've, you know, really impressed in the Premier League, but maybe not at the starting berth they deserved. And you can say, right, you know, on Thursday, yeah, go show me why you should start on Sunday against Forest.
The number of substitutes permitted has changed the game for Liverpool, especially. Like, Klopp isn't a manager who makes changes for the sake of it. He wants someone who can make a difference to the game. And that's why he's not giving out token appearances here. When you've got those five substitutes you can play with, he can make three and know if someone gets injured or there's a red card, he's still got two up his sleeve, so he can react to it. And there is that strength and depth in the squad. Like, the one game where you think they're not going to get the win was Brighton. I'm not counting Tottenham because that was a ridiculous game. And that's because, well, they were losing two of the forwards. Yeah. They'd already taken Elliott off at half-time. They didn't have those game-changing players they could bring on the bench in the second half. Whereas every other game, they have had them. And there is that competition for places. Like, it is a starting 11, but when you can make so many changes and still have some up to sleeve, you can do it at half-time, it's bigger than that, isn't it? Like, Elliott could be part of the starting 11, as he was for most of last season. All five forwards could be. All these senior midfielders could be, when you've still got a couple of them to come back. It is that strong spine there. And the youngsters, for the start of the season so far, they're showing more than a group of youngsters than we've seen for a while. Like, Quance has not looked out of place. Dope showing good glimpses and had good chances. And while we might not have seen like much of McConnell or these ones yet, they're still knocking on the door. And you'd like to think maybe see them Bournemouth or the Europa League games when they've actually got through. But yeah, it is this step in the right direction. It's Liverpool 2.0, but it's only year one. And there's all these players are going to get older together. Salah might be at the wrong stage of it, past 30. Yeah. Van Dijk might be. But the rest of them still got their peak years ahead of them. And it's just going to get stronger for places with new signings. They're all moving together. And when they start to win things together as well.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, they've all had mentioned the players that I want to talk about. I'll start with Salah because he scored the two goals. Sean, I mean, it's hard really to sort of put into words like how good he is, but he is becoming a player who can have a game. You know, a lot of people said it was a poor game Saturday. I didn't think it was that bad, but you just know with Salah that he'll come up in decisive moments, and that's what he does, isn't it? And that's what I kind of think, that's why I see him as going towards the Ronaldo, not quite Messi, but the sort of Ronaldo numbers bracket, where he just always is decisive, always scores goals.
100%. And it was a strange one, wasn't it? It was almost like one of those games where the Jota puts in, where I suppose with Jota, it's often he's not really on the ball and then suddenly he scored one or he's back to brace. Salah did have quite a lot of the ball first half. Like where we sit is lower sensitivity, we're pretty much on the halfway line. So we had quite a good view of the Salah-Mikalenko battle, which was unfolding in the first half. And, you know, initially was thinking, oh, Salah's not getting a lot of change out of him here. But not just to deny credit to a player of the opposition, but I don't think it was a case of Mikalenko suddenly raising his level and kind of having Salah in his pocket. I just think quite a few times Salah just took the wrong option, didn't he, and tried to run down a bit of a blind alley, or it wasn't the best ball into him, or it was a bit of a loose touch. So on that basis, I'm not surprised that he eventually, you know, became the defining figure in the game and got the two goals. But it's like you were saying before about Van Dijk, you write these guys off at your absolute peril, don't you? You know, like,
football loves to write someone off, though.
Oh,
loves to go. He's finished.
And I just don't. I think with Salah, the key thing with him is, and you see it this season in the amount of assists and the variety of how he will fashion one of those assists, whether it's, you know, outside of the boots. It's all sorts. Obviously, it's his pace. That's a massive part of what makes him so good. But his technical range, I think it's up there with like a Trent or a Thiago, what he can make the ball do, you know, with his left foot, obviously, inside or outside of it. And that's why I just think he's not like an Owen or someone who, when his pace goes, there'll be nothing left. You know, like, there absolutely will be a lot left. And, you know, we've done stuff on this before. We mentioned a few seasons ago, perhaps thinking it would happen earlier. Does he eventually come inside and like play behind the striker or behind two strikers? And
that's where you can compare him to Messi.
Well, this is it. Yeah, it's. I think it's a comparison that ultimately won't be spurious.
Yeah, I don't watch Salah and think that this is a player who just uses his pace. Mm-hmm. He just gets himself into great positions, doesn't he? You know, he's very physically strong, isn't he? So it's not just pace; it's more about the way he shields the
ball.
Part
of this, how teams play against the ball as well. Like you think when first started 17, 18, teams were high; they had all that space in behind.
Yeah.
Liverpool getting behind, they've got all that space on the pitch to run into. Teams don't do that against Liverpool anymore, so you've got to be smarter on the ball, create your own spaces. And this is when we've seen his dribbling ability. It's amazing how he can just drop a shoulder, beat through. Like, we've not seen him score too many from it this year because teams are putting two defenders on him. But the one he scored in Austria against Lask, that was that sort of dribbling ability. And he has got the eye for a pass or creating a chance out of nothing.
There's one on Saturday, where I think it was an Everton corner or free kick, and Alisson like pings the ball out, and I don't know if it was Tarkowski or who it was, but someone was like right up his back and he just touches it on his thigh, like cushioned it and then like played the ball off the support, however it was. And it's like, you know, for most players, that would be a highlight reel on Instagram. You know, that would be, they'd probably get like a Sky Sports documentary or a Netflix inside series. But just for Salah, you kind of, you know, as you both say, you look at him and you think, this isn't a player slowing down or getting to the end of his game or, you know, losing his key traits. And I think because he's such a, you know, such an athlete in terms of like his physical presence and how he is like, you know, pace-wise, I think his technical ability does get overlooked, and his intelligence. Yeah. And just I know he didn't have a great game on Saturday by his standards, but just some of the positions he does try to pick up, and like where he drops inside, and you know, Trent can go on the outside. He isn't a player who, I mean, there was always that famous clip, wasn't he, when he joined, and there was, you know, some Serie A reporter saying that like he runs with his head down, you know, whatever. But he's such an intelligent player, and I think that genuinely does get overlooked.
Yeah, I agree.
He's basically an outball, isn't he, at times? Which, given his size, given he's not going to like, you know, stand up to a centre back and beat them in the air. But if you ping it at him, you can hold the man off and bring it down his chest, which is remarkable, really, isn't it? You know, there's not many wingers you can say have that in their locker.
Does his little celebrations where he takes his shirt off? There's not any fat on him. Strong ass.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. He's an outballer. He's not an outballer over the top, is he, as much now? You know, and I think Theo's right. You know, you remember that first season. How many goals did he score where he found a bit of space, ran from the right hand side, and then placed it across the goalkeeper with his left? I always remember the City game when they lost 5-0 and before Mane was sent off.
Yeah,
he had so many chances there. But as you say, teams don't really do that anymore. So instead of being in behind, he's now controlling the ball with his back to goal. And I think Liverpool play better with him in the team. And I know that might sound an obvious thing to say, but I mean in terms of they function better. Yeah. And they're not just more dangerous to have him. It's just the way that they function. And when you take him out of the team and when he gets substituted off, they often don't look as good or as cohesive a unit, and I think that's one of the remarkable things about Salah.
I think as well that the new lads in midfield have really helped, because when he is doing the opposite run now where he is coming in field, you've got the two lads bombing the other side, so it's like, you know, as a centre half you've got the decision of, right, do I go with, you know, Szoboszlai who's making that run, or Trent, or whoever, or do I stick with Salah? And you know, if you go with Szoboszlai, then Salah's turning, he's putting his foot on the ball and he's picking out, you know, whoever's on the left, whether that be Diaz, Jota, Gakpo, whoever. So he's just, as you say, you really can't win with him, because whichever decision you do make, it's probably going to look like the wrong one.
Yeah, but that's another reason I'm coming to the next player I want to talk about. I think Nunes, like you say, is taking up one of those roles of sort of runs beyond or runs with the ball and lets Salah sort of do the technical stuff. And obviously he creates the second goal, Theo. But I mean, we're in the office and obviously we're working the game from the office, and one of the guys, again, I won't name him, but doesn't support Liverpool, was just quite sneering about him. You know, he came on and he was like, oh, people forget he's an 80 million player. And I really like Nunes, because I think Liverpool just look more dangerous when he's in the team. And when he came on, I just thought every single time he's involved, you think something might happen and you think that Everton might be opened up, and suddenly their players can't just sit. They have to follow runs, they have to stop dribbles, they have to watch that runs over their shoulder. And of course, when he gets the ball and breaks, I think he doesn't get credit, because people just look at the goal stats. When you're that expensive, people don't just look at the goal stats. But I mean, he makes that run, it's such a good pass, and it was actually this was almost the identical goal against Everton last year than they with Salah, but it was a really good pass. It puts it on a plate for Salah, I still think this guy just doesn't get the credit he deserves.
No, he doesn't. Last year, there would have been moments where he goes alone, his head's down, and he just shoots, and it goes miles wide, or he's blocked, or he just messes up the pass. But he's playing with confidence now, and he's certainly looking a lot mature as a player than he did a few months ago. And he's just a centre-forward. As a defender, you'd hate to play against. Mm. The same as strikers always say they hate to play against Van Dijk, because he ticks everything. He's got everything. Nunes has got everything. He's got the power. He's got that pace. You just can't stop him. Like, we're all that age where we remember how Didier Drogba absolutely tormented Liverpool season after season. And while I'm not saying being identical players, they have that combination of pace and power where, well, if you go tight to him, you can just still chest it down, bring the midfielders in, or he can turn you and just go alone. He's such a good player to have those abilities. And while he's not ever going to be Erling Haaland, Mr. Robot, he's still going to score a lot of goals, cause chaos and make things happen. But it's not unorganised chaos this year. There's always a method to what he's doing. Defenders, when he gets that run in the team and he is scoring more goals, it'll maybe get the recognition, because they'll be certainly looking at him, fearing him. Like, if he's getting past you, he's through on goal. And now when he's got the final ball in his locker and he's getting these passes on to Salah, like, he's got so many assists from already this year. Yeah. It's looking like such a good partnership. Like, if he hadn't had the cramp, he hadn't had the international game, he probably starts against Everton and he would have thrived. Like, even before or after the red card, when the crosses are coming in, you know, there's no Everton players on those wings. He is the player you want jostling with those big centre-backs, trying to compete for those headers. So you're just waiting for him to get a consistent run of the team and make sure it's not just Salah who's the only one who starts every week. Nunes is as well.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Anything you boys were selling Nunes before?
I think Theo's absolutely nailed it in the change from last season to this. Like, last season it felt like he was, you know, an agent of chaos outside the system. A little bit like when Diaz first came, it was like he's kind of his own man, but it's working, we'll let him get on with it a bit. But eventually that has to be within the system, and he has to absorb it a bit more tactically, and he's massively done that. Yeah. I think not only is his kind of expected goals, expected assists, I mean, even last season in a small sample size, it's very high. You know, he's right up there with like Haaland and Salah. You know, it's not daft saying that. But I think it's that idea that, you know, Klopp referenced quite a lot about the press and the defender from the front. When he's really bought into that and absorbed it, that's when he started my team, and that's where he is. That's what he deserves now. And you see it in every game this season. I think, like, whether it's a small cameo or it has been a start, he's offered something. He hasn't looked out of place. And now as well, the other sign is like the partnerships are going on. Like him and Salah. I've got one mate who bangs on about Liverpool should be playing 4-4-2, and, you know, that's your next partnership up front, those two. And I don't think it's that daft, is it? They play together so well, and lethal on the break. And the thing as well now is with the guys in behind, whether it's, you know, Jones and Szoboszlai, arguably the first choice, kind of two number eight high up the pitch, those behind Nunes make his job so much easier. Mm-hmm. You know, Liverpool can kind of camp high up the pitch because of what Jones does. There's all sorts of different ways into Nunes because of the likes of McAllister and Szoboszlai behind him. So I think he's caught up with the system, and the system's being built around him better.
Final player I want to talk about, Gravenberch. Kiefer, you mentioned him before, so you may as well build on that. I mean, it was a really promising performance. I mean, he's looked good in flashes, I think, every single time we've seen him so far. But I thought this was him bringing it together a bit more.
Absolutely. I mean, even before against Brighton a few weeks ago, I thought he was really good, but he misses that chance, so everyone kind of remembers that. And they're a bit like, oh, that probably tainted his performance a little bit. But, I mean, first of all, probably a bit fortunate that Jones, obviously, has got the suspension, as I said earlier, but, you know, you can just slot someone else into the team. And I thought he was brilliant. And the thing that I really liked about him is that there was loads of, I think we said it before, Joe, that there was loads of Wijnaldum comparisons, which maybe felt a bit lazy at the time. But the thing you reminded me about is he is like a Swiss Army knife in terms of, like, any type of ball that got popped into him, whether it be, you know, up on his chest, up in the air, you know, on the half turn, on the, you know, with his back to goal completely, he just handled it, and his touch was immaculate. And the really good thing I liked about it was one touch and go. You know, you kind of brought Liverpool up the pitch in moments where, especially in the first half, where a 12:30 kickoff at Anfield after the international break, you know, some people might be a bit guilty of going backwards and then, you know, being a bit patient. But Liverpool just really, especially with a team like Everton, who are going to try and, you know, take the mick and waste time a bit, I think it's really important that you're recycling the ball well and not letting it go out of play and kind of being direct and when you've got possession. But yeah, he was brilliant, and he kind of just epitomised that. And I saw something earlier, I think he only misplaced one pass, which is just madness. Yeah. In a game like that, in, you know, such a high-stakes game where, you know, tempers are flaring and he's got the potential to spill over a bit. I just thought he was really good. And what is he, 21 still? 21, 22? And he's brilliant. I mean, at what, 34 million initially? What the fee was? It looks a steal. And, yeah. You know, I think maybe people were a bit sceptical that Bayern Munich were perhaps letting him go. And, you know, if he's not getting a game for Bayern Munich in, you know, a one-team league, well, what's he going to do at Liverpool? And I think, you know, you're looking now, he's been here, what, 2 or 3 months? The signs are, you know, really, really good. And he's only going to improve on that and build on that when he builds up relationships with Szoboszlai. And I said to one of your mates on Saturday, imagine if you put, you know, no disrespect to Endo or McAllister, but if you put like a Fabinho of 2019 in that midfield at the base and you had whichever number eight pair you wanted to pick, I mean, you'd do well to name a better midfield in the league than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is really exciting and it feels like, you know, Szoboszlai's obviously hit the ground running. Okay, McAllister probably hasn't, but just because of the position he's in. But like I say, if you add a number 6 into that kind of concoction, it is really, really exciting for Liverpool. And like I say, with Gravenberch, from McAllister, Szoboszlai, all what, under 23, you know, the future, that's the midfield for, you know, 7-8 years if they play it right.
Swiss Army knife is the most useful thing that is useless, isn't it? Has anyone got one?
Do
you use it?
Jack of all trades.
Not used to.
You're not, unless you're in the Swiss Army, you don't really. I mean, you get them in like, I don't know, Christmas cracker, don't you?
Anyway, I got one for my birthday just because I
didn't. You got your Swiss Army knife? You're still friends with this person?
Lizzie got me one. It wasn't the only present.
You get off friends, don't you?
Well, I didn't know what to ask for, so I don't have one of those.
Joe, I'd be glad I didn't call him a Rolls Royce.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind a Rolls Royce, but a Swiss Army knife I wouldn't find useful. I mean, I hope Lizzie's presents have improved since then.
Well, she did take me to Egypt, didn't she, a few months before that.
And that's slightly better. I forget the Swiss Army knife. Right, well, really quickly then, before we finish off, I think we should look ahead to the next Europa League game, Theo, because it would be one Liverpool won't want to lose on Thursday night.
Yeah. I was so tempted to just interrupt you and get it in first.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. I would add a two if I can't make those jokes. I can't.
This was going so well as well, wasn't it?
And someone started drilling outside as well, so that's rude. But anyway, quickly, changing the team, wholesale changes.
Pretty much. Yeah, why not? It works for Liverpool so far in the Europa League. You've got enough depth there, and you've got enough players in that squad that you want to see start games and get opportunities.
Yeah, so let's name a team then quickly. I'll stick with you. Your back four.
Well, obviously, Keller's in goal. Back four, Gomez, right back, Matip and Kwanzaa, and then Tsimikas can start, just because I didn't think he was great against Everton, and I think he needs a run of games to build some rhythm consistently. You're hoping he performs and gets himself into form. So that would be my four.
Yeah, go along with that.
Yeah, same as me. Same as Theo, sorry. Tsimikas was maybe the one you could change, but I think it would be counterproductive to put him in and then take him straight out. Yeah. I think Bournemouth, probably next week, you're looking at one of the young lads, whether that be Luke Chambers or Callum Scanlon, to maybe put in. But I think on Saturday it was quite notable that some of the relationships weren't there. You know, so with Van Dijk, I thought Alisson kind of was quite hesitant in giving it to Tsimikas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if he can kind of, I know Arsenal won't be playing, but, you know, kind of receiving the ball off a goalkeeper again and getting used to those patterns, it's sort of going to benefit Liverpool, isn't it?
Sean, clean sweep? Or?
Yeah, I think so. I initially was going to say I'm not sure Tsimikas starts 3 in a week, but this is the one I would definitely start him in, and then you've got the option of Gomez maybe coming left if you need him on Sunday.
Okay, sticking with you, Sean, then, your midfield.
I think this is difficult, but Endo, I would say, definitely gets a go this time. And then it's just a case of who you stick with. Endo, I'd probably go Endo, Elliott, Gravenberch.
Yeah, keep it.
I go Endo, Elliott and Jones. I know Jones and Elliott, we don't normally see them together.
Is Jones back for the weekend, or is it back?
No, he's got one more back for Bournemouth. Yeah. But just purely for that, to kind of keep him in this rhythm. He played the USG game, he started that, didn't he? So, you know, just to kind of make sure he's, because he's had such a good start to the season, it'd be a shame to kind of put, you know, keep him on the shelf.
Yeah, agree with that.
Yeah, I'm the same, Joe. Part of me would like to see Gravenberch given another start, because he's one of those exciting players you want to see play.
Yeah.
But you can't have a month where Curtis Jones doesn't start football matches. Curtis Jones has to come in. Elliott deserves a start, and we just want to see more of Endo as holding midfielder, don't we?
Yeah, agreed. I mean, one thought on Endo is, I suppose the Japan thing has thrown that, you know, because he played away, didn't he, with Japan for a couple of games. But I did wonder, after this international break, whether we'd start seeing more of him. And I think if we don't, that to me now is a hint that perhaps he's not really ever going to be sort of.
Well, we know the links off with Andre in January, so it's maybe it was just a stopgap for 6 months. You won't sell him at a profit, but it's not exactly a big loss for a player that age.
It's quite telling as well, McAllister, that, you know, that he played after the international break he had last time. You know, that it was perhaps a bit of a risk. I mean, if McAllister had dropped another stinker again, you're probably looking at thinking, well, that's two international breaks in a row.
Yeah.
I know they charted a play in this time, did things a bit differently, but you know, if you were looking at it in terms of destinations and kind of longevity around the globe, you'd probably favour Endo to go straight in. But as you say, it's probably a bit of a hint that...
Well, Endo gets the extra day, doesn't he? Because he's coming from that side rather than South America.
Yeah. Forward line, Theo. Shame Doak has picked an injury.
No Doak. Salah starts because...
Yeah,
he's captain then, isn't he? Because he's the only one of the leadership group, so that would mean a lot to him, being a captain for the day. And I've got Elliot in the midfield. But if I want to put Gravenberch in, Elliot would take that. Nunes up front. And then let's put Gakpo on the left. Let's let him feel his way back in. And then just take him off at half-time.
That's assuming he's going to be back, isn't he, Gakpo? Because obviously
he did train last week. I think he only had one day training. Yeah. So obviously we've got open training Wednesday. You'd like to think he gets a couple of sessions in this week.
Yeah, keep it.
Salah, and then I'll kind of, if Gakpo's fit, I'd start him down the middle and then Nunes on the left.
Yeah,
I'm going to put Jones in my front line, partly because I forgot to put him in my
midfield. I'm going to roll the dice.
He's going there and he's got a license to have a bit of fun and, you know, take a crack on him from the left. I don't know about Gakpo. I suppose, you know, if he's ready, then he should play. But I'll be cautious and I'll go Jones, Nunes and Jota on the right.
Okay, quick prediction. Does anyone think they're going to win?
I mean, every home game's been a win so far this season, hasn't it? And at least two or three goals. I'll go 3-1, the traditional scoreline.
2-0. Yeah, 2-0. Okay. Right, we'll leave it there. We'll be back on Friday to discuss Toulouse and to look ahead to Nottingham Forest on Sunday. See you then. Farewell.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.